Welcome back to the Motivation Minute Podcast, where Spencer Harrow, that's myself, and Jeriah Miller host discussions on business and entrepreneurial ideas. Episodes highlight industry-leading books and present a summary of key ideas. Visit our website to learn more and join the discussion at motivationminute.com. All right, let's get this started.
All right, I'm excited.
We're talking today about Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. Let's talk about the author first. So,
right.
Kiyosaki, he's a big proponent of having greater financial education in the school systems, which gives you some idea of his bias. He's coming from a perspective where we need more financial education. It's lacking now. Another thing that Kiyosaki holds is that market crunches, when we're in severe dips, those are the best times to buy because that's an opportunity. We talk later in the book about how the profit is made when you're buying, not when you're selling, which is an interesting point that Kiyosaki makes. It's all about the decisions that are made in that process. And finally, he's a big real estate investor and big into the gold, silver, and oil industries. So that gives you just a little bit of background on him.
Okay, interesting.
I think the book is best summarized by a quote that he has on his website. It says, "People learn to work for money, but never learn to have money work for them." You can emphasize work, but I think the greater emphasis is on money. The rich don't work for money, but they still have to work. Isn't that true?
Exactly. It's all about the mindset or the real reason that you're working for something. You can just be working for money, like most people, paycheck to paycheck, or you can be working for something bigger. I mean, ultimately, you could say it's still money, but you're working for a bigger reason, a bigger cause than just your paycheck.
So one of the main principles that Kiyosaki says is that cash flow tells the real story about how a person handles money. The goal in cash flow is to analyze the money coming in and the money going out. And we want to maximize assets and minimize liabilities if we have much hope of achieving wealth. So we should talk about what's an asset versus what's a liability. And it's all defined by cash flow, if it's positive or negative, right?
Yeah. So an asset is something that puts money in your pocket, and a liability is something that is costing you, it's not benefiting you. A lot of people will spend money on a nice car or a nice house, and sometimes we'll say a house is an asset, but most of the time it's not. It's just a luxury. You know, you see so many new cars driving down the road, and we think, well, they must have a lot of money, but no, they just have huge payments. They're liabilities.
Right. And the other factor is that with the houses, you are paying more than you're actually earning by having the house. Of course, it holds a little bit of value, but that's volatile. But houses just have problems because they decay over time in terms of things go bad, you have to fix things. You're always paying to maintain a house. So that's a liability.
Yeah, exactly. So a house or a car isn't necessarily an asset or a liability, because let's say if you have a business, and let's say you have a construction business and you need a truck to take all your tools to the job site. Well, then that truck is an asset because it's making you money. It's carrying your tools for you. Or, you know, a house, like if you're selling or buying houses, real estate, then those houses can be an asset. So it's just when you're buying it for yourself and it's just a luxury, it's the separation between an asset or a liability that you have to think about.
And then beyond the cash flow analysis, Kiyosaki talks about financial struggles for people in life, because most people work for others, not for themselves. And what Kiyosaki argues is that it's worse to work for someone else because you're essentially a hamster running around this wheel trying to earn money, but you end up paying more to the company and to the government in taxes than you would earn by working hard for yourself where you're growing the company.
Yeah, and one of the chapters was called, Mind Your Own Business. And, you know, he was just saying how most people spend their lives minding another person's business. They're making somebody else wealthy, you know. It obviously depends on the situation, but if you're minding your own business or you have ways to buy and sell assets yourself, then that's a lot more beneficial than just, you know, you're working for someone else your whole life.
And one of the worst liabilities is paying taxes, which I was amazed at a statistic that the average American works 5 to 6 months just feeding their tax money to the government. That's how much of their salary goes to the government in a lot of cases, at least when the book's written. So even now, it's a significant portion of the work you do that's given to the government, which we know comes out in different forms of taxation. But that's pretty amazing that as an American, you work harder if you're working for someone else, but you just keep feeding the government more. And Kiyosaki's whole point is he wants you to start your own business if you can. That way, that money goes to you when you invest the extra effort.
Exactly. And back to assets, a lot of different things can be an asset. You know, your job could be an asset depending on your goal with that job. If you're working at a job so you can learn from it and you're building your skills and you have an eventual goal with the job, then that can actually be an asset, or anything can really be an asset. If you have a mentor that's teaching you things, that's an asset in your life. It's you're learning, you know.
And then one of the biggest assets is our mind, because our goal is to always work to learn something new, because the more skills we have or the more we know, the better we'll be as a marketable person or having wealth built up in our heads. That's one of the big things about wealth. It's more than money. It's what we learn and what we know that helps.
And yeah, one of the chapters in the book was work to learn, don't work for money. Because if you're financially literate, you can always learn to make more money if you lose it. It's not just about the money that you have. So it's said in the book that being poor and being broke is different. Broke is just temporary, but poor is eternal. So if you're just broke, but you've educated your mind and you know about money and you know how to manage and make money, you can make that back. And so your mind is an asset if you're willing to learn instead of working to make money.
And one of the most important things about how we use our mind as a rich versus poor comparison would be, how do we consider luxury items? Because one thing is the rich indulge last and on cash. They like to try to make the money first, while the poor and middle class people tend to indulge the quickest on luxury and on credit, which is
exactly
a really bad formula. Because if you're indulging on something that you can't pay for in the moment and trying to spread that out, you're not going to make wealth that way. You're only spending and going paycheck to paycheck. You're having problems that way.
And it's going to cause you to not be able to do bigger things, more important things with your money. There's a quote, it says, luxury comes at the cost of killing your hopes and your dreams and ambitions. Because what most people do is they'll buy a luxury like a new car on payments. And they're spending money they don't have to buy a luxury that they don't need. And that comes at the cost of spending up all your income and your cash flow on something that is just a liability instead of an asset, which is something that we'll talk about later.
But there is a way to spend on luxury, and it's to save up ahead, because there's nothing wrong with purchasing something with the money you have. It's when you purchase it on credit where you didn't have that money in the first place, and then you purchase everything on credit, you make this disastrous formula where if you can't make the income one month, you're not able to support all these luxury items that you weren't able to afford in the first place. It's just spreading it out somehow made it work.
Yeah, that's the difference. That's a good explanation.
One thing that's significantly lacking in our culture today is financial literacy, at least when it's taught to the younger generation in the school system. We just don't really have that. Our kids coming out are not that well trained in finances.
Exactly, because most of the things that we learn about money, we learn from our parents. Very little is taught in the school system, and that's the reason some people are financially illiterate, because they didn't learn anything from their parents. Because it says a person can be highly educated and professionally successful, but still financially illiterate. And it's something that's very rare to be taught from by your parents. That's what the studies show.
Right, and the majority of people tend to follow the patterns of their parents. So if their parents are on a credit-based cycle where they buy more than they can technically afford at a certain given time, but they can spread out the payments, the kids probably follow suit.
Exactly. And one of the things you learn from your parents is, back in the thing we talked about first, is not working for money, but having the money work for you. So there was a story in the book about when Robert Kiyosaki was growing up, he had the opportunity to work for his rich dad, but he had to work for no money. The reason was is the rich dad was trying to teach him a life lesson that, you know, to learn to build the skills, and that's so much more valuable than just getting the money. To have a job, and he was still young, so he obviously didn't need money, but he had to work for a while for nothing. And I can just think of a story in that I can relate to, because my dad has a business, and he will always say that if his employees are just asking for a raise or asking for the money, it shows that all they care about is their paycheck. And he don't want people working for you that all they care about is the money and the paycheck. And he does give raises to people, but generally not to the ones that ask.
Yeah, and it's so true. We think we want to work for the money, and it's so easy to get in that cycle because we have budgets we have to maintain, we have expenses, so getting the paycheck is so important, and a raise is always great, but having the right motive behind it is super important, as you're saying, that we want to learn versus be working for the money. Because if we always want to learn, we're going to stay interested in the job and find a job that fits us a whole lot better than just working for the money, because you can go where the money is, but it may not be the right job for you.
And a good example is you with your engineering. I just know that you have a huge passion for engineering. You're always writing diagrams and equations and all this stuff, that you're just so good with mathematics and with your engineering career that in itself, like, I can see the passion that you want to learn. You're not just doing it for money, or obviously you wouldn't be that passionate about it.
Well, yeah, and starting out, it's not so important for me to find a job that makes the most money. The most important thing is to get the job that gives me the most experience, because that launches me to the next point in my career where I'll be staged for whatever's coming next, and money isn't the most important factor right here.
And that's an example where a job can be an asset, because you're using that to move to the next step, you know, learning the skills. And if you were just doing it for the money, you're just there like, I hope I can get a nice paycheck for the rest of my life, you wouldn't be learning, and you wouldn't be able to move to who knows what you'll do in your life, you know. We have so much potential, but we just don't act on it. And that's another point in the book, was it's not always the smartest people who become wealthy, because it's the ones that have courage and are willing to take risks.
Well, speaking of taking risks, let's talk about investments, because something Kiyosaki argues is that things like mutual funds, they're more quote-unquote secure investments because they're sanitized, in the sense that the gains are a lot less, and people are kind of lured into thinking, oh, a mutual fund, it's a safe way to invest. I'll go that route so that there's less risk. Well, his whole point is in this book is that you're not going to be that quick a wealth gatherer unless you're willing to take some risks.
Exactly. And I remember hearing some type of statistic. I can't remember what it was exactly. But it basically, if you're young and you decide to take the safe route, like a mutual fund and a steady job for the rest of your life, you're going to be far less likely to gather wealth, statistically even, than if you're willing to take lots of risks, maybe try to start a business, you know, go for a big job, and, you know, be, if you have that drive, and versus just going for the whatever's easiest.
Actually, on this same note, I got this diagram in front of me called the Rule of 72. The way it works that it talks about, I don't know if you've heard about this before.
No, I don't think so.
It talks about how long it takes you on a one-time investment. Like, let's say you start with $4,000 and you invest at 3%. The way it works is it says that in 24 years, you'll be at $8,000. In 48 years, you'll be at $16,000. But then if you invest at 12%, higher risk, in other words, you have the potential to make $1 million off of that $4,000 the way it works.
How many years?
Rule of 72 in compound interest in just 48 years.
Wow.
The whole point is the time value of money. It is so critical to invest early, because money multiplies when you let it sit on a rate of return. The lower of that rate, taking less risk, reduces your chance of multiplication. If you take a little bit of risk, there's a lot of potential for where you can go. That kind of drives home the point that people think about the stock market being a dangerous thing. Well, the thing Kiyosaki says, it's not quite gambling if you know what you're doing, because you can make some relatively educated investments.
Exactly.
And one of the neat things is you can kind of insulate yourself from some of the risk. Well, no, it's still risky, but you can be the person creating the investments, not buying them, and you've naturally given yourself far more potential to grow because you're the owner of the idea rather than the purchaser of a portion of that idea.
Yeah.
So your percentage of increased potential is a lot higher that way, which is interesting.
It did say something in the book about, you know, you can either become someone who's good at buying investments or creating them. And of course, that's easier said than done, but if you can do that, I mean, building a business is obviously more risky, but once you've built a business, you're not at the mercy of of your employer, you know.
You're your own boss.
You don't have the risk of being fired because, yeah, nobody's hiring you.
So let's jump a little bit into some of the criticism about this book. So some of the most blatant criticism I've seen is from John Reed, who has written an article that goes as even far to say that Rich Dad never existed. He argues that most of the points in the book are false, that there's no real way to accomplish this stuff, that it's very hard to make money the way that Kiyosaki says. And to his point, it is tough to follow Kiyosaki's principles because he has some lacking examples in areas. He has some get-rich-quick schemes where, like, he goes out onto some courthouse steps and makes $40,000 in a couple hours by cutting some deals with people. It doesn't always work that way. Or knowing which stock to buy because he's got the inside scoop before it launches out after the IPO and goes big. He has some inside information that some of us don't have. So, yeah, there is a point to that. But there's probably better to hold the middle ground. And there's an article I read today by Trent Hamm at The Simple Dollar. And some of the main points he was saying that are pretty true about the book are, yeah, if you want to be wealthy, stay frugal. And pay off your debts real quick. Invest in assets that are constantly generating positive cash flow. Maybe real estate, which Kiyosaki says is a really good way to make money. It's not always the best way to invent money because there's a lot more liabilities in real estate than Kiyosaki was talking about. There's problems with tenants and fees and taxes and huge problems that can come up. Maybe investing in intellectual property could be a better way than real estate.
Yeah, I think ultimately it doesn't matter. It's not as important what you decide to do. I think it comes back to your mindset. And you know, it's hard to not get into some political things when you're talking about money or how to make money, because there's always going to be differing opinions. So yeah, it's good to look for the middle ground and read a lot of different books and also research the authors beforehand. That's one thing that we have in our how to read a book checklist.
Right, it's critical because it's helpful to understand their bias and then use that as a weighting factor as you're reading the book to see how it compares against your worldview, and then it helps you take it in at the appropriate level for you.
Exactly.
So we're going to have a little fun here. I think we should ask each other something that we learned from the book with a somewhat pointed question to see how we're going to apply it in our daily life. Because the thing about these books is you can read them, but until you start applying them, you don't extract the full principle of what's there. So I'll kick it off. This book talks about buying on credit and how that's a bad idea. And now that you've read this book, what's something in your monthly expenses that you think might be inhibiting you from growing wealth?
I think probably eating out, or even just buying, you know, if you're stopping at a gas station and you want to go inside and you want to buy a drink. You know, just little things like that, things that you definitely don't need. Just this weekend, I went out with a friend and, you know, we watched a movie, went out to eat, and I realized, you know, we spent a lot more money than I thought we spent in just in one weekend.
Yeah, those stores tend to rip you off, the convenience stores.
Exactly. So that's one thing for me, I think, that just thinking about, is this a luxury, you know, is it a liability, or is it an asset? That's one thing that I'm going to think more about, hopefully.
Cool, I like it.
So here's my question for you. Can you think of a time in your life or something that you're doing now that you feel that you're working specifically just to learn and not with money as part of the motivation to do it?
I think probably the biggest and probably most obvious thing I've done is going to college, because I'm not doing anything but spending money on education. I haven't made a dime yet in engineering. I'm trying to get my first job right now. And so the biggest thing is getting that education and the slip of paper that says, hey, you have the training that enabled you to get through college. You were able to persevere. You can accomplish a task. Having that piece of paper, applying it to where you're going next, and having that knowledge base on how to learn, which is a big thing about an engineering degree, teaching you the thought process, how to approach learning. That's an area that definitely hasn't paid off yet, but it's a huge investment for what's to come and for the many-fold return it's going to have over my career.
Exactly. You have put in a lot of investment, a lot of time, the last 4 or 5 years of your life into that, or maybe longer. And that's an example where you can look at some, and a lot of things, you could look at them two ways. They can either be an asset or a liability. College, for example, if you just go into college and you just want to go there to have fun and party, or and you're just doing it because your parents said you should and there's no reason to do it, then that can be a liability. But if you do it like you did, Spencer, where you invest your time and you're passionate about it and you're learning a skill, I mean, yeah, you've learned crazy stuff about engineering that I have no concept of. That's when it's an asset. It's when it's so it's not just whether you're using it as an asset or a liability.
And it's an asset to a point, because you can get, say, your bachelor's degree, then go for your master's. But there's a point where the rate of return on that investment in the degree diminishes. And there's certain career paths that don't require higher levels of degrees. And so you learn more on the job in that case than you do in any educational institution. So yeah, there is a purpose to learning, and that's a key point of getting a bachelor's degree. But it's nice to get paid and learn at the same time when you get on the job, because you start getting that return immediately.
That's a good point.
Let's jump to our number one takeaway. For me, it's cash flow. Always keep it positive. I think that Kiyosaki's point of focusing on assets that generate wealth on their own is important. And at the same time, minimizing liabilities, in other words, anything that causes negative cash flow, because to achieve wealth, no matter what your income level, it's important to have those assets outweighing the liability so that you have a positive difference there. Otherwise, there's really just no way to get to that wealth equation properly.
Yeah, and that was also going to be my main takeaway is thinking about assets versus liabilities and always having that in mind. And I was lucky enough to have my dad tell me this, and it stuck with me ever since. When I was 10 years old, I think, my dad told me that to think of something as an asset or a liability. Liabilities are really just luxuries. So anything that you have, that the only reason you have it is because it's nice or you really want it. It's not benefiting you. It's not creating cash flow for you. And yeah, I'm going to quote this quote again. It says, luxury comes at the cost of killing your hopes and dreams. And a lot of times that's true, because you spend all your income now on luxuries, and it doesn't allow you to have free income, free cash for important things, investments in the future.
Yeah, such a big portion of building wealth is reinvesting your profits, because that's the only way you get that multiplicative effect. You can invest it once, and then you could spend it, and it's gone. If you were to invest, get a return, reinvest the return, reinvest, all the way down, you're always maximizing that return and the investment potential with that. So that's a really good point.
So now we'll give you a preview of our next book that we're going to talk about. It's called Startup Nation, and it's about how the country Israel has had so many exports and has created so many wealth and jobs in an area of the world that's very desolate, and there's no natural resources, you know, and all the surrounding countries do not have the same wealth creation as Israel does. And I think we're going to try to do it without getting too political, but I think there's so much we can learn, because it takes entrepreneurial ideas up to a whole other scale of how a whole country has used that.
And you put that whole country against all the hostile neighbors. I mean, it's an incredible story how Israel's come out of this, all this hostility around them, and they're able to maintain such a high level of entrepreneurialism. And so, yeah, there's a ton of lessons I think we have to learn in that book, and especially for America, where, you know, we're in the process of getting our economy back, and to see how Israel has rebounded is going to help us a lot, I think.
Exactly. I'm really excited for this book, for sure.
Okay, to conclude, remember to check out our website, motivationminute.com. There you can see all of our podcast episodes. You can enter the discussion by joining the blog posts there.
Also, we have a reading checklist that we use to read our books super fast. It's a way to get so much information out of the book without spending time to actually read the whole book. And it's a really valuable resource that I've learned, and you can download it for free on our website.
And then please consider leaving a review of the podcast. We really value your feedback. And if you leave a review, we'll enter you in a monthly drawing for a book featured on the podcast.
And you'll get that absolutely free. I really enjoyed this episode where we discussed what we learned from the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I've wanted to read this book for a long time, and I'm glad I finally got it done. And so make sure to join us for our next episode, where we'll be talking about Startup Nation.
See you next time, guys.